We would like to begin this podcast by acknowledging that the land on which we record is the occupied, traditional, and unceded territory of the Stalo First Nation.
There were just children and adults alike who were really proclaiming their hope in the future because they had a newfound confidence in themselves from all they had learned over the years of our partnership with FH.
Welcome to the Ending Poverty Together podcast. I'm Shalane, and we're here to discuss big questions about poverty in bite-sized ways. This episode is a little different than our normal ones. Currently, our Food for the Hungry team is strategic planning, and in the process, one of the questions we were asked to reflect on is, what's one of your favorite FH stories? And I have to say, what came next was pure gold. So today, I'm interviewing a few of our staff to give you an insider perspective on why we are so passionate about the work we do. So, Haley, thank you for joining me on the podcast today.
Thanks, Shalane.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. If you wouldn't mind just starting by letting our listeners know, what is your role with FH Canada?
Yeah, so I am the Supporter Engagement Coordinator with FH Canada. So if you've ever sent us an email or given us a phone call, you've probably chatted with me. I am a real person on the other end of the phone.
Yes.
It's not just a robot there.
So, yes, I can vouch for that.
Yep. So that's me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Well, as you know, the theme of this particular episode is what's one of your favorite stories? And I have already had this conversation with some of the other guests, and picking just one story is really hard. But what do you love about the work you do?
Yeah, so a lot of my job really is just connecting with people. And I love being able to chat with our donors and find out what makes them so passionate as well about FH Canada. And yeah, just really share the love of the work that we are doing. One of our favorite donors, I won't say her name, but she'll know who she is if she listens.
Okay.
She is a wonderful painter. And so one of her, her passions over sort of COVID specifically was painting. And it has just continued to blossom over the last 5 years. And so she'll sell her paintings to friends, members in the community, that sort of thing, and donate those funds towards some wells. And so our wonderful donor, she's on, I think, her fourth well right now that she's been able to contribute towards. And so, just getting those phone calls from her every, couple weeks, month, whatever, is just so exciting. She sends me pictures of the paintings that she's done. And yeah, being able to share those with the staff as well is super inspiring, and just getting to know more about her and how excited she is about being able to support through her her paintings to build wells.
Which really speaks to the heart of the people who support the work that Food for the Hungry does internationally, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, she has like a world focus as opposed to just her community.
And no doubt she's not the only donor you interact with. What are some of the other highlights of your interactions and your conversations with supporters?
Yeah, well, over Christmas, we had some tricky times with the mail strike. And so we did want to, as part of the gift guide, send out those Christmas cards that our donors love to get every year and have gotten so used to it. So we actually hosted a Christmas open house. And so it was so beautiful to see the community just come and visit the office, get to know the staff a little bit and pick up their cards. Yeah, we got to have hot chocolate together and just sort of chat about the year and then the year that was coming, and make sure that everybody had information that they needed about the gift guide and get their cards and that sort of thing. So it was really great. It was a great time to have, just in community with our donors. And then most recently, we just put together Hope Notes. I think it's the 35th edition that we've published now.
Wow.
And so, that's just been landing in mailboxes over the last week. And so it sounds like people really had a chance to read that over Easter and share it with their loved ones. And so we've been getting comments sort of all weekend, and going to read them today has been so much fun. People love the articles and the stories, and they really resonate with our donors here in Canada. And it's a labor of love, really, that is done by our marketing team and the country offices that we work with. And yeah, it just feels really good to be able to relate the work that's being done to the donors who are supporting. So thank you, donors, for supporting and seeing the work that's being done. We're really excited when you can see the impact.
And I think that's one of the beautiful roles that you play, Haley, is bridging between someone who is interested and passionate and participating financially, even with the work that's happening in our international communities, and being able to answer questions, being able to direct them to different ways to be engaged, whether it's through child sponsorship or gift guide. You really are that frontline person, and I believe also a real encouragement to people who phone in or who email. So I just want to thank you for doing that.
Oh, thanks, Shalane.
Yeah.
And thank you for everybody who calls in.
Yeah, that's right. And now this is the opportunity to say, call and have a chat with Haley, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I'm here Monday to Friday from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Pacific time.
There you go.
And I will be the voice on the phone if you have any questions.
Yes, of course. I am curious, before we wrap up, when you hear the stories from the international communities that we partner with, what moves you? What is it? I know you love people. I know you love interacting with the Canadian donors. There must be something about the work that happens internationally that also just gives you a really strong sense of call to this work.
Yeah, I think it's just the stories of resilience that we're seeing from the communities. We as FH Canada can partner with the communities, and sort of we try and bring our expertise as well. But really, the communities are owning their own experiences, the work that's being done. And yeah, just truly seeing the resilience that goes on in communities that have been hit with experiences of climate change or drought or conflict, as we see in different countries as well.
And for sure.
Yeah. So really seeing the resilience of the communities and the joy that they still have is really inspiring. And I love reading those kinds of stories. And then, yeah, just seeing changes that are happening in communities, in hearts and minds. Most recently with the Child Marriage No More project. I love seeing how communities and individuals, mothers, are really able to break down sort of social ideologies and stigmas about child marriage and the value of women and girls in society. It's just really, really encouraging. And so, it's been a great opportunity to see those stories up close and personal.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Haley. And for those who are listening and who have called in and spoken to Haley, now you know her a little bit better.
Thanks so much. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Haley. Isaias, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
I am delighted to have a conversation with you. Isaias, you are one of the most recent additions to the FH Canada family. What is your role with FH Canada, and how long have you been here?
Yeah, this is my fifth week here.
Okay.
So I'm pretty new. And yeah, my role is I'm one of the program officers here, so I'm part of the International Programs Department. So the way, as I describe my job, is that I'm kind of a bridge to operationalize the vision, mission, and strategy the organization has.
Okay. And within this very short time that you've been working together with us, you have had the opportunity to travel to Guatemala to be part of a trip and see the work in the communities. So I'm guessing that maybe one of your favorite FH stories so far comes from that trip. Is that fair?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it is difficult to choose one story, one single thing, because when you visit a country like Guatemala, without romanticizing, you see a lot of beauty there, you know, a lot of beautiful things happening there, wonderful things. Mm-hmm. But when I was thinking about one single thing that I would like to share about, what came to mind was this, what we call savings groups. So yeah, we had the opportunity to meet with this wonderful group of Mayan women, and they shared a little bit about the group. This model is in other countries, they call it self-help groups.
Okay.
And yeah, it is fascinating what they are doing. And yeah, I'd be happy to share anything you would like to know.
Sure. Well, it's possible that someone listening isn't familiar with what a savings and loans group is. So maybe just even describe a little bit about what you saw, how it works, and what's the impact that these groups are having.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it is basically a group of women, in this case, that come together in principle to share experiences, to build community, to share their dreams and sorrows. But along with that, they get some training in financial literacy, entrepreneurial skills, conflict resolution, how to save money, systems to loan out the money. And yeah, from there, a good amount of good things happen from that.
And did you see some examples of some of the good things that happened from that group in particular?
Yeah, well, they save the money together. Then they use that money to loan out to women in the same group. In principle, for simple things as paying the kids' school fees or if they have a health emergency, something like that. But what is really interesting to me about these groups is that eventually some of those women, they start small businesses or income generating activities. And that is fascinating. And that is why I came to this sector, to the international development sector, because I was supporting those kind of groups.
Yeah. And I'm curious what income generating businesses or opportunities you witnessed from that group. Because I'm thinking of times I've been there and I've seen women who their weaving skills and their clothing design and some of those beautiful traditional pieces that they're creating have become an opportunity for them to generate some income for their families. Was that part of this one or which one were you in? Because there's lots in Guatemala.
Yeah, well, this one, I don't know if you're familiar with this one, but the name was The Little Bees. In Spanish is Las Abejitas. Yeah, it was a short period of time that we were able to be with them. But what I remember is that some of them are raising chickens. Some of them use the money for agriculture-based businesses. That's what I remember from this group.
I think that's one of the things that is so exciting about the savings and loans groups is that it affords individuals opportunities to pursue things that they are passionate about. It's not something that becomes a prescribed, you must now run this business. It's more of what are you interested in and what would you like to pursue?
Yeah, that's right. And let me expand a little bit that concept. I mean, regarding the business, that is right. But the group itself is that, you know, they own the group, you know, they decide how to manage the money, how to save the money, how to give the loans, the repayment rates. So everything comes from the community itself, from the group itself. And I think that is one of the most important things here, because that is in line with this concept we have at Food for the Hungry of being community-centered, you know. It is the community making the decisions and not ourselves telling them what to do.
I'm kind of chuckling, Isaias, because I remember being in one savings and loans group and they actually had a late fee. if some of the women showed up late to their meetings, they had to pay a fee. And that was something that they together decided. They had a high value on starting promptly. And so they put this thing by agreement as a group, they put this in place.
Yeah, that's right. They set the rules. They are the ones that decide what works for them in that specific context. And I think, in my opinion, that is beautiful, and that is the right way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Isaias, I really appreciate you taking time to have this little chat with me. I'm grateful that you've already gotten to be in Guatemala and to see what's happening in FH communities firsthand. And I'm looking forward to working with you longer term. So thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Caitlin, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, this is a fun episode. It's great to be able to chat with my colleagues. Why don't you tell us, what's your role at FH?
Yeah, for sure. So my role is a program officer on the international programs team at FH Canada. So I oversee projects that run in three of the seven countries that we work in, mm-hmm. Which means I often get to travel to our communities and see some amazing work as well.
Yeah, you really do have an insider perspective on the work that happens, don't you? Because you're connecting directly with country offices.
Yes, yeah, it's very special for sure.
Mm-hmm. So the question of the day is, and I'm phrasing it as, what is one of your favorite FH stories? Because I know that was actually part of the challenge for people when we were talking about doing this episode is, I have so many. So feel free, what is one of your favorite FH stories?
I love it. And I'm going to cheat a little bit on my answer here because I have been telling people that my favorite story is not exactly one moment, but a really small collection of moments of change that I witnessed through a graduation celebration that I was able to attend in Rwanda.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'd love to share about that.
I would love to hear about your perspective on that because I actually had the privilege of being at that graduation celebration. So curious to hear what you're going to bring together.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to bring in some context because I think it helps frame why I found these particular instances just so powerful. Mm-hmm. So in my past, I've traveled to a lot of different developing countries, witnessed a lot of poverty in many different forms. So poverty really can look so unique in each country and each community that I've visited, but there are some really prevalent patterns that I've noticed throughout it all. And I've seen these patterns in what people feel. So less so the geographic or the visual, and more so how people are feeling within their experience of poverty. So I've noticed that people can often feel a sense of shame, a deep shame, especially from parents who wish they could provide more for their children. I've noticed a sense of hopelessness, feeling that people have no way out and that their present life circumstances may never change. I've noticed a sense of isolation within families, maybe feeling like they are alone in their situation and they can't reach out to their community members for help. And I see a lack of confidence in people, especially in women who may not be empowered by their societies to make decisions on behalf of their own lives and their households or their communities. So I've seen a lot of this, and it's broken my heart, and it's why I do the work that I do. And it was such a special experience to visit the work of FH for the first time when I went to that graduation celebration in Rwanda, because for the first time I saw the other side of things. I saw the other end of that journey through poverty for people in these communities. So when I went to Rwanda and was able to meet some individuals in these communities, I saw some meaningful change in a way that we might not always come to expect it. So what stood out to me past the incredible interventions such as new water infrastructure or new livestock at people's houses and flourishing gardens was actually a lot more of the intangible things. So one of my favorite moments was watching a husband stand proudly behind his wife as she showed us the pigs that she was able to purchase for her family through her participation in savings groups and income generation activities. And another instance where a woman that I think, Shalane, you remember her quite well, who made a speech in front of hundreds of people at the community graduation, proudly proclaiming that she was now a respected person and respected amongst her peers as a leader in the community. I think she would have even used the word like chief. And that's such a great word, right? Such a great representation. Yes.
That woman had swagger. That was the term that I remember thinking, wow, she has confidence, and she was so respected by people in her community.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what I was going to say. I think I loved watching the warm smiles of everyone around her as they nodded in agreement. Yes, she is seen that way. She is seen as a leader, and we love her. We adore her. So that was that empowerment of women in the community, and it was really, really well received.
Yeah, Caitlin, am I remembering correctly, too, that she said her influence had gone even beyond her own community and that she was actually helping with agriculture and leadership in neighboring communities?
You know, my memory isn't that great, but I believe it. I really do. Yeah, I believe you in that, because that woman was a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah.
Absolutely true.
Yeah. What else stood out to you from that trip?
Yeah, I would also say that there were just children and adults alike who were really proclaiming their hope in the future because they had a newfound confidence in themselves from all they had learned over the years of our partnership with FH. And, you know, it wasn't some promise that an NGO was going to stay there forever or continue to help them. It was that they really did have confidence in the skills that they had established through their work with FH. And one of my most favorite moments was when we were able to meet a woman whose community had gathered around her and built a house for her. And she was previously houseless. And I thought that was such great evidence of the community coming around one another and finding the needs and caring for one another. And I think that is just the exact opposite of people feeling isolated and thinking that they can't ask their community members for help. So it was, a collection of these moments that really just stood out to me, and they're intangible pieces. They're not necessarily the infrastructure that you see as impactful as that could be. Yeah. So I love that FH equips people with skills and empowers them with leadership and instills so much confidence in themselves and in their futures.
And what we saw on that trip, like you said, was the evidence of one person at a time being changed. The whole community experiences great transformation, but we saw it at that very personalized individual level.
Absolutely. And I think that if you're going to see real change, you're going to see it in the real lives of individuals that you meet. And it was in every single individual that we met. And I think that's what will cause generational change and growth out of poverty.
Yeah. Caitlin, one thing I might just add here for people who are listening, we had the opportunity, you mentioned seeing the next generations being impacted. That young woman who wrote the poem about the impact of the work of FH in the community. If you're listening today and you'd actually like to see a video of that, we have that. So reach out to me at podcast@fhcanada.org and we'd be happy to share that with you. Thanks so much for being here today, Caitlin. Appreciate you telling your story.
Thank you so much for having me.
A big thanks to all three of my coworkers for sharing today and having these conversations about favorite FH stories. As I wrap up this episode, I just want to leave you with one of my favorite pieces of the work that I get to do at FH. In addition to being the host of this podcast and getting to interact with incredible people, I also have the privilege of being the public engagement manager, which means that I oversee trips and events. And trips is something that is very near and dear to my heart. The reason is we talk a lot here at Food for the Hungry about mutual transformation. When we go on trips, we have the opportunity to see what kind of transformation is happening in our international communities. But it's also about the transformation that happens to us as Canadians as we go and we learn. And when we enter into those experiences with a posture of humility and recognizing that there are things happening in these communities that our own neighborhoods would benefit so much from, to me, that's when I know the work that we're doing is, it's really truly transformative because it's affecting everybody. So if you are interested in participating in a Food for the Hungry trip, please reach out to podcast@fhcanada.org and we'll be happy to share information on the trips that are upcoming and see if you could be part of joining us on one of those adventures. Thanks for being here today. And if you have any other questions or this episode sparked any comments or thoughts from you, or you would just like to learn more about Food for the Hungry, please email me at podcast@fhcanada.org.